Yo, this is Rob Rondo here from Wheel to Rise.
This is Jazz Hands McFeels from Fashion the Nation.
This is Mark Collett from Patriotic Alternative.
You're listening to the Nordic Frontier.
You're listening to the Nordic Frontier.
You are listening to the Nordic Frontier.
Good evening. This is a special episode. Tonight, we have a very special guest. German descended Aryan, proud man. Well-traveled, educated, enriched, enlightened. And this will be a glorious interview. So, scientist, tell me about your early life.
Hello. My early life. I was born in the German Democratic Republic and grew up there until kind of Germany was reunited, and during that time a lot of things have changed, and I have good memories to the earlier time. And after the reunification, I still was going to school, finished it after 10 years, and went to learn measurement technique. And yeah, that was basically my early life. Then at a young age of 21, I was joining the military for 8 years. I could exit a little bit earlier. And yeah, basically that was my early life already.
So maybe you can tell us also about your background education, like.
Yeah, during this military time, I made my high school graduate in the evening school. So after the military, I left the base and went to school in the evening, 5 times a day. And after the military, I got a lot of money there. And I financed in that way to study physics. And yeah, I finished with a Master of Science at the German, they call it Elite University. Today I wouldn't say that again. That it's a especially good university because they call it Elite. And after the time, I again switched my field and became also a teacher for math and physics. And after that I was teaching for a while. And from that point on, I made no formal education, but I couldn't stop educate myself. And I was going into cryptocurrencies, learning a lot about that. And and recently I changed the field again because cryptocurrency got a little bit, a little bit more stupid in the recent years. What happens there? What the content the people were talking about that, and I changed the field again to self-sustainability research.
You told me once also you have some experience in data analysis or statistical analysis. Am I right?
Yes, if you study physics, you have always some experiments, and they come up a lot of data, and you, it's like a basic education. If you study physics, that you can handle the data and calculate complicated signals out of noise and so on, and there you need statistic methods and also some kind of programming skills. And also for cryptocurrencies, I was working with a lot of data, and with this and was using all these methods I was using for physics also for cryptocurrencies to analyze price data and so on.
So you had a pretty good head start.
What a head start.
Yeah, you already knew how to read the data and ultimately becoming a successful Bitcoin miner or cryptocurrency miner.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's a good basic education if you're going through such a pretty much heavy study way of studying some content and these things remain for your life, and you're basically not learning to solve every problem, but you learn how to learn and how to solve problems you haven't heard about before.
Yeah, that's very, very useful. I think we have a saying in Iceland, there's no problems, only solutions. Maybe it's in many other countries, but I think that being a physicist is not only saying it, you live it. Like you truly see the problems with solutions instead of seeing the problems as an obstacle. Does it make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm also thinking always in solutions more than in problems. So if there's a problem, you have, of course, to analyze the problem. But my mind is always looking for solutions to handle these problems and make them not a problem anymore. It's more like an opportunity to grow.
Yeah, definitely. That's a very good way of putting how life should be. The struggle. It's not a struggle, it's the right enjoyment, right? So, maybe you can tell us a little bit about self-sustainability. You have many ideas there about, you know, electricity and how to manage a house without counting on others.
Yeah, that's my recent field I'm working on. And one field I was doing some work, and I've also some confirmations about that. I'm not very successful in growing plants. At least it failed in the first run. What we could see that it works, what I'm working on, it's the electroculture. So there's a field, or there was some researcher who discovered or rediscovered that if they put very high voltage above seeds while they are starting to grow, that these seeds, or the plant who was starting to grow in these high electric field, that they are gaining back like an original or an older a version of themselves. They are growing in double size, and they're growing bigger. It's like...
Could you say they're becoming more natural?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's still research. We don't know really why they grow so big and what happens there with the genes. Is it a repairing mechanism? Or is it just an adaptation? And was the atmosphere in earlier times was a higher electric field? And that's still open questions. Why that happens? And the problem is these kind of research does not happen at universities. It's also a very old technique. The first publications I've seen were from the 1700s, end of 1700s, and it came up again and again, and it was always suppressed again. It should be hard for us to grow things, maybe.
Yeah. All right. So you became a late bloomer when it comes to becoming a nationalist. How did that happen?
Yeah. So during that time, after I was a teacher and started to work with cryptocurrencies, During that time, I analyzed the money system, or first I understood what is Bitcoin and how it works. And from that standpoint, understanding that, I was looking back to our money system and discovered that this was a big fraud. And also, it was possible to figure out which ethnicity these people who own the banks have. And yeah, but at that time I didn't believe that the Jews are controlling everything. That came a little bit later when COVID started. I left Germany with my family to Iceland, and at that time I was looking for kind of resistance groups in Iceland, and I found Nordic Resistance and read Our Path. And it was a good read. I think it was a little bit more than 50 pages. And then I discovered, oh, I'm a National Socialist. I was it all the time from my heart. And I didn't know, but yeah.
Like the seeds we have, returning to nature, the natural law, that is National Socialism.
Yeah, exactly. I see it the same.
Yeah, when I read the Our Path, I agreed with almost everything. I think 99% of it. So how can you not back that up?
Yeah, exactly. So I have a little bit less agreement because of my knowledge about money, and they were talking about banks on the in Our Path, and I think it's better to use cryptocurrencies.
Yes.
Because it's a system and not a bank, who can't be, so it can't be sold because nobody owns it. And in the end, I would say that's a better solution because it's a solution which can potentially last forever. And a bank, if you have, again, a national bank and let pass, I don't know, 10 generations and the next Jews are there, they will likely be able to buy our banks again.
They will resell themselves inside like they always do. It's a cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting, man. So, as a non-Nordic person, how did you find the movement? Like, where did you discover it? Did you see, where did you first hear of the Nordic Resistance movement?
I think it was, I remember, I was looking on Odyssey. It was there was another project library connected to Odyssey, and I was looking on this platform for videos a little bit, and then I found a video uploaded from Nordic Resistance, and I was watching it, and then I was researching more about it and met Our Path. So that was all about the story. Then I tried to talk to one guy who gave me connections to the Icelandic branch, and then I was sending a message, and we were meeting and talking.
Yeah, all right, very interesting, man. It's still out of my thoughts or my mind to understand that, you know, there is people, a lot of people from non-Nordic people that are seeing, you know, the movement. And truly, I don't have a understanding myself how, say, big it is, but it's funny. Also good. So do you think cryptocurrency has future for, do you think it could be used forever? Do you think it's going to be overrun, corrupted, and taken down into a banking system?
That's hard to answer the question. From technical perspective, yes, it has absolutely the potential to be longer on the planet than humans. Depends on
the computers we have.
Yeah, as long as one computer is there, there's a complete blockchain on it.
Yeah.
I mean, even if the last human is dead, there could still be a computer running, and then Bitcoin would survive the humans. So it has a potential. And the question is just if it will be a success. And
I think the question is if the Jews get their hands on it, it's destroyed.
Yeah, that's not so easy to get the hands on it. They have tried already, because the control is decentralized to the miner around us. So every miner has a piece of control. So if you want to control the blockchain, you have to at least to have more than 50% of the miners. And if a blockchain grows big and many people participate and there's no border, why you cannot participate? You just need hardware and a program and then you can start.
But you also need internet, right?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, you need internet, but that's also a problem which the people see and they have started to develop on that. And they developed a way to make a transaction in the network via radio. So you don't need internet then anymore. Because the Bitcoin people saw already that problem that we need internet. Yeah, that's correct. But if you take all the internet down, even then, one day you want to switch it on again, maybe. And then Bitcoin is there again. Because it's still on the computers, so
yeah.
You have to really take down all computers if you want to kill Bitcoin.
Or even jam radio frequencies.
Yeah, I don't say it's impossible to take it down. I think the biggest threat, and I haven't mentioned that yet, the biggest threat to Bitcoin is that the people don't really understand that this is really a good thing, because it's out of the control of the Jews. And
also, it's not only out of control of the Jews, it's just it is under your control what you do with it, you know. You decide.
Yeah, it's under community control.
Yeah.
So everybody who mines has a part of a voice. And I think the biggest threat is the propaganda which says that Bitcoin is bad and fraud and so on. The people listen to that and believe it and don't invest their money and don't use it, don't accept it. So and I think that's the biggest problem, that it's so hard to understand. And I think it's not really hard to understand, but the motivation of the most people is not there to educate themselves and also the time. I mean, we are all caught in the system and have to run for food and shelter. And who has the time to spend to to educate them yourself? And the next point is, we are all educated at school, and there is no education about money. So, and it's the system, our money system is made so complicated that everybody is scared from understanding Bitcoin because our money system is made like that, that nobody understands it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so your advice is to get people to invest in 10 computers with good processors and bury them in the basement and let them run 24/7.
I would say the risk is very high, because especially Bitcoin is such a thing. There are special miners, they are called ASIC miners, so they can mine Bitcoin, but these computers can do nothing else. And That took place a little bit industrialization of mining, but it's still very decentralized and it's not a big problem. But how can you participate in the best way? It would be if you produce your own electricity and then you can take old hardware, because it doesn't matter, you have no costs, so and then keep the costs low. No costs for electricity, and then keep the costs low for the hardware, take old hardware, and then it doesn't matter. You don't need to be in a struggle about coins. That would be like printing money all the time. You just need your own electricity and cheap hardware, and then it's like printing money.
So do you
think that's what I would recommend?
Yeah. So your the best form of cryptocurrency is Monero, you say?
Yeah, Monero is basically there have been a lot of problems solved which Bitcoin has, like I said, with the ASIC miners. Monero doesn't have that, and per default, Monero is privacy focused. That means you can't see the transactions, so nobody can look into the blockchain and see who has sent whom money or how many money do you have. And that's different to Bitcoin, where you have an account or like a wallet number, and on that wallet number, if you have that number, you can see how many money is on the wallet.
All right, interesting. Yeah, that's very, very interesting, and I think this can be utilized in many ways for many, many, many successes.
Yeah, I think anyway, this is the way to make a meaningful resistance. If everybody would change or would accept Bitcoin and try to use it as much as we can, the system would dry out very quickly. There's no power to suppress us then. And if your money is like energy, so if you're taking this energy from our enemy, because we are all using cryptocurrencies, we agree to do it, then we would have won within months.
Yeah. We would need to fight for the right to have a bank account to maintain the movement.
Yeah. Yeah, but then if we would all do that, likely they would have no choice. They would have to take down the internet. There's no other way then.
Yeah, I think that is also something we are kind of expecting, to be completely censored from the internet eventually. At least.
Yeah, that will maybe come anyway, yeah. We should force them to do it earlier than they wanted to do it.
Yeah. And we will be rich with cryptocurrency anyway. We can pay with radio frequencies.
Yeah, there are also interesting ways to maintain the internet. It's a while ago that I read an article that in Canada, people were experiencing that the telecommunication company didn't want to put up the internet in a region, in a rural region, because it was too expensive, too far away. And then the people had a cryptocurrency based on cryptocurrency system where they started to put up radio
antennas.
Yeah, radio antennas to amplify the signal and send it further. And everybody who was running such a tower was getting some money for it, yeah, in form of cryptocurrency. And these cryptocurrencies, of course, could be sold at an exchange and exchanged for dollars if you need dollar.
So we used to have pirate radio, now we have pirate internet and cryptocurrency. Interesting.
Yeah, at least that could be organized,
yeah,
with cryptocurrencies and end up completely without central instance and internet without central instance. That would be great.
Yeah, glorious. All right, maybe change the topic a little bit. You can tell us a little bit about how it was to be a teacher, like your experience with the being an educator.
Yeah, very interesting, because I had from the spectrum very different schools. During my education, I was at a high school, but only a few halls, and at a, we call it in German, Brennpunktschule. So it's a school where, it was in Berlin, where many, many foreigners were in, like in a concentration spot, and we had, I think it was 90% foreigners in these schools. And Yeah, later I read about these Kaufmann plan, Kalergi plan, and so on from the Jews, and then I realized it works. They were a little bit stupid, not per default. I think it's a social problem for them because they come mostly from Arab countries or Turkey, and the parents were also not very well educated, usually farmers or something like that. And in the end, what happens to the kids there? They didn't speak their own language from the countries where they came from, and they didn't speak German. So they had a mixture of it. So, and if you don't learn at least one language completely, then you're missing something out. And how we think, we are thinking about in language. And if you don't learn a language 100%,
you're
missing out capacity, thinking capacity in your brain.
Yeah, I think that the language is like it becomes a part of your soul. Like, and I think that like how languages develop also depends on the environment around you.
Definitely, yes.
So if you speak 5 languages, just 30%, all of them, you are going to be very confused, I think.
Yeah, I believe that's true. And that's also, if we go to, how was the guy who has written the book 1984?
George Orwell.
Yes, Orwell, exactly. He has written in his book also a thing like, about language, that they change your language so that you cannot address a problem because you have no words for it, and then you can feel there is something you don't like, but you can't really express yourself because the words are missing.
Yeah,
that's exactly the same phenomenon.
And if you have ever read or heard about the African languages, they are missing a lot of things that we use like on a daily basis, for example, about ethics, you know, why we're morality, which is also part of our soul, you know. So if you ask average African, you know, why is he good to this person, he says, because he is good to me. It's not about, oh, that's the right thing to do. You understand?
Yeah.
Also
yeah,
about calculus, you know, they are, instead of saying, you know, there's 4 there, it's like, that's more than 3, it's more than 10. Many, but we will say, you know, the accurate number, this is 10, this is 11. So that's why they say, you know, I will be there when the sunlight is up, not I will be there around noon, I'll be 12 o'clock.
Yeah, that's also, I think you can see that also, how complex the language is about how many words it contains. I think,
yeah.
If I'm remembering right, German has around about 70,000 words, and I think it was Albanian, it was just 20,000 words. So.
Yes, I think Icelandic has similar amount of words that and as German. A lot of, I think we also are creating, you know, almost every new technology that comes. We are not, you know, English using English. We are creating Icelandic words for that specific item. Like we spoke about, you know, instead of saying downloading, I say niðurhala. Or the podcast is a hlaðvarp. I think that the mark of a dying language is that when they start to create lesser words, and start to adopt other words from another language, and ultimately it's going to be replaced, just like genetics.
Yeah, I agree. And for podcasts, I think we have no German word. At least I don't know.
I think so. That if it would be, you know, 60 years ago, you would have made a German word for it. But I think that, you know,
definitely
Germans are, like you say, being colored. Yeah. Maybe you can tell us your ultimate black pill for the future. The worst case scenario, you see.
The ultimate black pill. The best, yeah. I don't know.
Total Jewish control.
What did you say?
Total Jewish control.
Yeah, I think exactly that's what I wanted to say. We have all these ultimate black scenarios in our heads because these are the plans of our enemies. If that comes true, I think that will be the worst which can happen.
But we can also look at it, like you said, instead of looking at it as a problem, it's an opportunity to prove ourselves as, you know, worthy of being free, being alive for the struggle, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a dangerous way to think that we might be defeated, because we cannot let that be in our head. You know, ultimately we are going to be successful and be the victors of our own journey.
Yeah, I agree, and I think also not that I think not that they will succeed. I don't believe that. Just if it would be very hard to come out of this again. I mean, it's hard now, and they haven't really managed to bring that again through, and it's even hard today to leave the system and become self-sustainable.
Yeah, but I think that humanity has seen many darker days than this, and I think that this is like just a part of the cycle. I think that every single time there's an event in human history like this, you know, there's a major struggle between the races and everything like that, it ultimately leads the world to become a little bit better. And then, you know, there's another struggle in, let's say, a millennia or 100 years or 200 years, you know, go through very various stages of catastrophes or conflict, war, or whatever. And this is like a part of the human struggle. And there's no life form on the planet that does not struggle to survive or exist. It's just the natural way.
Yeah, I agree to that, that it happens in cycles, and that is, it is maybe a part of development we have to make.
I think that one of the major flaws or bigger flaws in modern humans is that we seek happiness, but we should not seek happiness, we should seek power. Power does not mean you want to dominate, it means that you want to have power over your own, you know, future, your power over your own life and your people.
Determine.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And these cycles you were mentioning, I think we have shorter cycles, like 100 years. Every 100 years you have exchange crashes and more wars than usual. But I also believe there are longer cycles, and for me it feels like we end up in a longer cycle. We enter a longer cycle now, and I believe that this, what we are experiencing now, is like a very dark period, and there must have been better times for humans. And I believe after we kind of survived this, what's happening now, we will have better times again.
Definitely, I agree. All right, maybe we go to the opposite of the black pill. What is the best case scenario you see in the future? How can we seize our power? How do you see, like, you know, the, let's say, to say, how do you see the Nordic nations in 100 years? Best case scenario.
Best case scenario would be that we just wake up, throw out every non-white person, and we live in freedom on the one side, and struggle just for us and do everything we do for us. And then I see in 100 years we see us flying around with UFOs. And being I think that's
victory.
People just would stop doing things they are told to do,
yes,
instead of following our feeling and doing what is right to do.
Yes,
we have this inner voice which says us, this is right, this is wrong.
Yes,
and we just need to follow it, and then it will be over. Very simple.
Yes. Okay, so one last question. How compromised is the science community?
Yeah, very much. I have written a paper about it. So in physics, that's where I come from. I discovered that, for example, Einstein was wrong about the ether. He made some experiments. I think it is Michael Morrison experiment. And they were trying to find out that there's no ether. Or they, at least the science press communicated it like that. That no ether exists, and that's not true. And I studied physics, and during that time, I still got learned the wrong formulas, and even now I read books about it. And in the 70s, was also one guy complaining about the science community, how they were not recognizing evidence about the ether. And there's a German scientist who has rediscovered, so he discovered on his own the technology to send energy around the world with antennas without having any loss. And this energy is going through the ether. And he has built these antennas, and he has written a book about it, and is selling also an experimental set, and the people can reproduce his work. So this is clearly evidence that there must be an ether where the energy is then sent through. And I've seen during the time now more than one proof that it exists. And only physics alone is not recognizing that. And the scientists who make work on that, they are... They're mocked?
Yeah, they mock it, they ridicule it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the doctors that ridicule people that want to count on a herd immunity and their own immune system instead of getting vaccinated. So you're getting ridiculed.
Yeah, exactly.
Even doctors that, you know, refuse to be vaccinated are ridiculed.
Yeah, we see that also in health. And... the whole science is today built on, in German we say Stofflichkeit, on our physical matter. And there is no spiritual world in this science, but there is a spiritual world. There is spiritual energy where all our physical matter is connected to. There is no way around to investigate this. To investigate these energies, to have a complete picture of our world. And this is completely denied, and this is in many directions of science. For example, we know all about the climate change, that this is a lie. And
how dare you?
Yeah, there are many, many more examples. Also, if you know the ether exists, this is a sea of energy. So there must be possible to build a machine which is sucking energy out of the ether into our world. And that would be then like a free energy device. That's how it is called. But physics of today have just a closed... system physics. It's a closed system physics, only in our world.
Only Einstein knew is physics.
Yeah. And this is across all science disciplines.
It is all across the world right now.
Yeah, but and this turns science into a religion. It's the university is full of believers.
So they remove spirituality and the higher purpose of science and replace it with physical matter and nihilism.
Yeah, no, I think it's really like a religion because they believe in things which are not true, and that's a religion.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well put. All right, I think we can make this be the last words, as you say. There's a higher purpose, there is spirituality, and there is problems to be solved.
Definitely.
All right. So, thank you for listening. Come thank the scientist for being a part of our moment and sharing his knowledge. With that, heil sigri.